Well, it's just over 2 months since Stefano Morani, the chief executive of Renogen, was last on BizNews. That point in time, you were having to try and maybe backpedal a little because the helium plant that you put together in the Free State at Virginia hadn't come on stream. There was a lot of criticism, but good news.
Indeed. You know, as with all things mechanical, engineering challenges can ultimately be overcome. And yes, while we completely acknowledge and own the fact that we were late, we got it on in the end. And now we join a very, very select number of countries on planet Earth with helium liquefaction capabilities.
Why helium is so important?
Just to recap, first and foremost, the thing that touches most of our lives is semiconductors. The reason that we have the shortage of cars and why secondhand cars are doing so well and blah, 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 and laptops and phones and the shortage thereof, is the semiconductor industry is suffering critical shortages of helium. Actually, the whole world is suffering shortages of helium. And so there's a backlog of semiconductors. But it's also used in fiber optic cable manufacture. You can't make it without it. You can't launch rockets. You can't manufacture MRIs, and you can't run MRIs without helium. And then the list goes on. But those are some of the key critical ones. So, like right through from using Google as a navigator to talking on the phone or to having this interview, if helium disappeared tomorrow, all of this technology would disappear.
Supply and demand would suggest that the price has reacted accordingly.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Without question. I mean, when we started this project back in 2013, when Nick and I bought the original gas fields, back then there was a massive oversupply of helium. I'm talking the likes of which there was serious oversupply. The pricing back then for liquid was somewhere between $200 and $250 per MCF or 1,000 cubic feet. Now, if you look at it, I'm aware of one semiconductor manufacturer in Texas last year having paid $10,000 an MCF for a small load. That's not reflective of where the price was, but I'd say that spot market at the moment is anywhere from $1,750 to around $2,500 for a load of liquid helium per MCF.
And is it one of those critical components that might not be a big part, but if you don't have it, you can't produce those products?
It's binary. Like, you're not going to manufacture a microchip if you don't have the helium. And it costs nothing. I mean, if you look at why the chip manufacturer was willing to pay $10,000 per MCF, is because the cost for one day's downtime in the semi factory, the loss from one day's revenue is equivalent to the entire year's worth of consumption of helium. So for them, it's negligible. But if you do not have it, you're not operating.
Yeah, that puts it all in perspective. Does Russia, given what an impact we've had on global supply chains of the Ukraine war, does Russia supply helium?
So Russia's got a tiny little plant in Irkutsk that supplies. It's a small plant. Look, it's bigger than our phase one plant, but that's not saying much. Our phase one plant is tiny. So Irkutsk has a little bit of supply. It's intermittent. Russia was building that absolute mega facility. It was a monstrous thing, the Amur project. It was the biggest helium facility on planet Earth, and it's a mega LNG project, tens of billions of dollars, and parts of it blew up. So that project is massively delayed. They're trying to resuscitate it and bring parts of it online now. But that thing isn't going to operate fully until guesses are around 2030, 2031, before it starts to come online. And even that mega project is only sufficient to replenish what was lost on the BLM being the strategic resource controlled by the United States government, which went offline.
You have a huge following amongst retail investors. They've seen the share price only tick up a little bit in the past few days after the news that you now are going ahead, you are producing helium. Is this a surprise to you, given that they have taken you to their heart in the past, or is there a little bit of trust rebuilding required?
So in fairness, the announcement was only made on Monday, and after the first day, it was just under 10%. That's not a bad first day. So just to contextualize that, it's not like we announced this last week and it's only done 10% after a few days. That's only been the first day. But yes, it goes without saying. I mean, you know, we were on track to have the plant turned on in October. Obviously, there were delays thanks to all of the previous reasons around COVID, logistics, and then failures. I think the gap between October and January really did result in a bit of a trust deficit, and we acknowledge that. And the key now is that it's my top priority to rebuild everyone's trust. And you know, we're in this for the long haul. This has been something that Nick and I have been at for 10 years. We're not going anywhere. There is a big project over here. And let's be honest, if this country continues on its current trajectory of perpetual naysaying of anyone that's trying to build new industries and new businesses, our economy is never going to grow. And I'm not saying that, you know, people should turn around and say, rah, rah, re-us. We're not the investment for everyone. But by the same token, it's very easy to be a fund manager and to perpetually talk about how rubbish the small cap stocks are and to only put your money in the top 40, when in reality, the top 40 aren't growing the economy, they're maintaining the economy. And so if you really actually did have one altruistic bone in your body as a fund manager, you should stretch and you should actually go into the small caps, because the small caps are the ones that employ more people. The small caps are the ones that pay more tax. And the small caps are the ones that drive the economy and will be the leading cause of us coming out of this quagmire. So, you know, it's this perpetual thing of all of our asset managers, and maybe not all, let me just caveat. I mean, Mazi was there from before we were even listed. They've been a bastion, they get it, and they were the ones that inspired us to do this. Sunlum has been there from the beginning. Yeah, there's Ivy Asset Management. There's a handful of asset managers out there that are brilliant and see the wood from the trees. But you know, all of the others just going out there and talking negatively about all of our other small caps. And there are a lot of them, and they all say bad things about our small caps. Yeah, either stop it because you're part of the problem, or if you're going to carry on, then you have no right to complain about the South African economy because you are part of the problem.
I like that. I like that story. As you see, we've just had a little load shedding flash here, but I have got backup. Let's just move forward, though. Last time we spoke, you said that the 12-year, $40 million loan from the American Development Finance Corporation was contingent on getting the phase one going. In other words, proving the concept. Is it now taps open, now that you have produced your first helium?
So the $40 million loan was what we used for the first project. We've already drawn that and we've built the first project. It's the $500 million loan for the second
phase. My apologies, of course.
So where we are now that we've satisfied that as being one of the conditions, everyone is working flat out for a credit committee presentation, which will then be followed by a board presentation. And then it becomes a mechanical process from there. And if we make it through both credit and board, then it's safer away.
So that's the big story. The next big hurdle, as it were, is for the Americans to fulfill their obligation.
It's not an obligation on them yet. We are going through the processes. But yes, we are all hands on deck with all of their respective teams. They've brought out very, very competent teams on the LNG side and on the cryogenic side, engineers. They've been through all the P&IDs and all of the engineering schematics. They've scrutinized and upheld our EIA applications to the highest levels of the IFC standards, not even South African standards. So everything has been scrutinized to the nth degree, and I'm very pleased to say everything is heading in the right direction. Of course, that's no guarantee, but everything is absolutely on track and heading in the right direction. So fingers crossed.
But that's got to be the game changer for your business, for the stock, for everything. If the Americans come up with that $500 million and they go ahead with phase two, which is taking your pilot plant into a massive production facility, relatively speaking, then it's a different company that we're talking about. So do you think that there's a bit of dubiousness in the marketplace being reflected in your current stock price, or how else can we do this? Because, I mean, just to put it differently, if it was an obligation on the Americans, if they'd said, "Okay, you've got this is a condition precedent, tick the box, here's your $500 million," I'm sure Renogen's share price wouldn't be where it is at the moment.
No, absolutely. Look, if they come through and it's all systems go, The train leaves the station, right? And it goes into a very, very, very materially different trajectory. To put things in context, there's another company that's locally listed but has operations in the US, also in the transition energy space. That's how they categorize us when they look at us. So there's helium and there's transition energy. And if you look at the volumes of gas that we produce in phase two, we match them. Our profitability doesn't rely on government grants. The profitability in this project is actually significantly higher by virtue of the fact that we have two products, not one, and we're not reliant on the third party's feedstock. And yet you look at their market cap compared to ours, and theirs is many, 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 many multiples of ours. And that's because the Americans traded on a forward EBITDA multiple of somewhere between, I'm aware of one helium transaction that was recently done privately in North America at a forward EBITDA multiple of 12 times. We're sitting at a forward EBITDA multiple of 0.4 times. And that comes back to the basic fundamental understanding by investors as to what it is that we're working on. So yes, the share price is low. Is it going to change in time? I sure as hell hope so. Is it going to stand in the way of us fulfilling our obligations? No, it isn't. And are we going to go ahead and build this project? I think by the time that we've managed to secure the debt from the DFC and then from the second lender who's come to the table with an underwrite subject to final credit, but for $250 million, you quickly do the maths and realize that there's not an inordinate amount of dilution coming up for a project that is very, very material.
So if you've now got a second funder, does that mean mm-hmm. that if the Americans, if the Development Finance Corporation does not go ahead with the $500 million, that you've got a plan B?
No, because the second funder is for $250 million. We need a total debt pool of $750 million. And so the DFC is actually working hand in hand with the second lender. And there's information sharing, there's due diligence teams, there's all parties calls. Everyone is working together towards the same goal.
I want to just ask you to perhaps share your thoughts on a big debate that's been going on BizNews in the last few weeks, started by Rob Herseff, who said that we should stop listening to the greenies and start fracking, essentially. Then responded to by Graphrenet lawyer, Mr. Light, Derek Light. And then we had another interview with Dr. Pindile Masangani, who's the regulator. Now, this is all to do with exploring whether we've got shale gas in the Karoo. Your nameplate says that your principal asset is that you're the first and only licensed onshore petroleum production company. So in other words, you've got a right. You must have followed this whole fracking story quite closely. Well, I hope you have, and maybe you've got some insights.
Yes. Look, it's controversial. So before I launch into this, I need to make a few things clear. One, our operation does not involve fracking. So, don't paint me with any brushes. I have a view on this. And in order to be able to express my view, I need to contextualize where we got to as a country on where we stand. When the original studies were being done on whether there were environmental issues associated with fracking or not, the technology at the time was antiquated. That technology is not used today. The concept of hydraulic fracturing is widely used where there is an availability of water, but modern fracking techniques, you don't actually use water anymore. You separate nitrogen out of the air and you pump nitrogen down. So the whole concept of hydraulic fracturing is actually a thing of the past. Why the debate continues while technology has moved on is just beyond me, but it gives someone something to cling to. Now, is the concept of fracking good or not in terms of extracting the gas? There will be leaks. That's inevitable. So in other words, if the fracture goes beyond the payload zone and it goes into the other rocks, there will be seeps. Biologically, we need to just contextualize again. What does methane do to you as an organism, and what does methane do to animals as organisms? Well, pardon me being crude, but you fart methane because your body produces it. Methane is not a toxin. Methane is what's produced in the natural process of life as carbon moves through the chain from being a single element through to becoming a sugar, through to becoming carbon dioxide, and then going through that cycle again. The fact is that methane is the natural consequence of the carbon cycle, and all organisms produce methane. So how toxic can it be? That's the first point. The second point is that if you're really going to study and you're going to look at things on an absolute level playing field, which is, in my opinion, the only way that you really can do these things, you need to look at, if you're going to use modern fracking technology, which is the only thing that would work in South Africa, if you're going to use modern fracking technology and you're going to look at the cradle to grave emissions produced in a fracking operation, right through to the processing, transporting to the customer, and delivering either thermal or kinetic energy, and you look at the entire chain, and then you compare that entire chain to alternatives like solar, like wind, which, don't get me wrong, they're great in their context. But when you look at the damage done in the production of these alternative forms of energy, and you don't just look at the tailpipe emissions, but you look at the cradle to grave, I can tell you now, the solar story isn't pretty. It's not pretty by any stretch of the imagination. And if you had to probably do a full cradle to grave analysis, you're probably going to end up in a position where gas doesn't look so bad after all, even for fracking. Does that mean that, you know, we need to be cautious? Of course we need to be cautious. But this, in Pindile's words, is all a completely academic debate and a waste of a lot of people's time until someone is allowed to sink a hole and determine whether the gas is there in the first place.
So let's get drilling, as she's told us, regulator Pindile Masangani. Just one final point. I've just got back from Davos, and there you deal with people from all over the place. And the name of Robert Friedland came up again, not in very flattering terms. What's his relationship with your company?
So Robert Friedland is a major shareholder in a company called Ivanhoe Mining. There's two Ivanhoes now. There's Ivanhoe Electric and there's Ivanhoe Mining. So Ivanhoe Mining has an operation here in South Africa. They're building what they deem to be the world's biggest platinum mine. Very sophisticated operation. They've also got some copper operations up in the DRC. They took a stake in us last year, about a 4% stake in the business. And this was part and parcel of a potential bigger transaction, but at the same time, a foothold for them to secure energy, because we all know the challenges that we face in South Africa from an energy sustainability perspective. And with that foothold, it gives them a certain sense of energy security in their project here in South Africa. And so we've got a very close relationship with them. One of his key members, Alex is a board member, and Alex sits on our board meetings, and we've got a great relationship with them. And their aspiration as a company is to ensure that all of the metals that they produce, in particular the new age battery metals, are as green as possible. Now, when you're trying to mine using Eskom's power at 1.04 tons per megawatt hour of carbon dioxide equivalent, which is obscene, compared to, say, generating a gas solar solution from us at 200 kilograms per megawatt hour, in other words, an 80% reduction, it makes your metal pretty green.
Got it. And just load shedding generally in South Africa, is that going to affect you? Obviously, there's an upside because you produce an antidote to load shedding, but load shedding itself, is it going to affect the construction or your production processes?
No. For phase one, we neatly positioned, in the sense that the amount of power that we consume in phase one is not a very large amount of power. And we're very close to the mines over there, and our power comes from a very, very stable source, which doesn't get load shed, purely because it deals with the health and safety of people working underground in pretty harsh conditions. So we're not concerned about load shedding in phase one. Phase two, we would never have been able to enjoy that status because the power required in phase two is quite a step up. And so for phase two, we're going to be self-generating power, and there may even be an excess of electrons, which we then feed back into the system.
Stefano Morani with some good news today about Renergen. Yesterday, the information released that the plant phase one, the model plant has started producing. It will be selling or generating the first revenue for Renergen and opens the door to, well, the big mama, which could transform the whole look of the Central Free State area. He is the chief executive of Renergen, and I'm Alec Hogg from biznews.com.